Well, hello and welcome to this edition of My Car Guru. I am feeling pretty good today simply because I am on steroids, not to build muscle mass. At least I heard that's what they do. No, it's a pain reliever for my shoulder. I had an MRI yesterday. I think I mentioned that that was going to happen. And that's kind of a weird experience. You know, if you've never been slid back inside of an MRI machine, you haven't lived. You cannot be claustrophobic and do that. And if you are claustrophobic, I think they'll give you something to make you less so. But I didn't need that, so I just climbed in there, and hopefully they can find which of my spinal, I guess the bones in my spine, which one's squeezing on the nerve that goes to my right arm. I guess the thing I'm most concerned about, like I said yesterday, is my right hand. It just feels very weak. So I'm hoping they can figure that one out. I'm sure they will. Okay, so way back in, 2020, April 8th, as a matter of fact, 2020, a rollback arrived at my restoration shop where we do restorations. We work on our own stuff. It's called an internal shop, meaning that we only work on vehicles that belong to Gateway Ford and Gateway Nissan. And so we do, you know, minor, it's primarily the cars that go there are the ones that are lower priced vehicles that have more problems, more things wrong with them. Because quite frankly, my Ford store and Nissan store, they don't have time. And really, like a fully certified mechanic doesn't want to work on old stuff. If he's fully certified in Ford, he wants to work on Fords. He don't want to work on Chevrolets and Hyundais and Kias and Daewoos or anything like that. So we send him up to that place. And I have one guy that works in there and a helper. And they're able to pretty much take care of it. They probably push out two or three cars a day, depending on how much needs to be done to them. But on April 8th, 2020, this rollback arrived with a 1952 Ford F4, which basically it was a stake bed truck, flatbed. 1952, the windshield had been completely shot out with, there still were a few remaining bullet holes, and they weren't 22s, I can assure you. But this thing was unloaded at our dealership, or at G2 is what we call it, gateway number two. And so I went through a process of a month or so trying to figure out, what am I going to do with this thing? Well, I had several iterations that I had thought out. One, I was just going to build another flatbed and just fix it up, not spend a whole bunch of money. My budget for it was $20,000. I paid $1,500 for it. So as we started uncovering things and pulling things apart, we noticed that there were a number of issues. Number one, the frame was almost rusted in half. Didn't know that when I bought it. And then the cab had way too much rust in it. So I said, great. Now what? Well, I had a guy working in the shop at the time. His name's Charlie. Charlie said, Lenny, I know where we can get a cab for one of these that'll work, and he probably has some frames and stuff. I said, Charlie, that's like buying a whole new truck. Well, I know, but, you know, it seems like this is something you're really wanting to do. And I said, well, I kind of am. Can we get it pretty cheap? And he said, yes. And we were able to. We were able to find a 1949 truck. And the cab and everything was basically off of it. And then I started thinking. Well, he started thinking for me. He said, Lenny, why don't you put a modern frame under this thing and turn it into a modern flatbed? And I said, well, I guess I could do that. And then I slept a couple of nights on it. And I said, you know what? I'd like to have a car hauler. I wonder if we could turn this into a car hauler. So I went and told Charlie. Well, Charlie called the man and he said, Lenny, you're in luck. We have several a van body, E450s chassis in stock. These were ex-rescue squad vehicles, fire department vehicles. They have a van body on the front. And then, you know, it's just like a full-size frame. And it's a dual rear wheels. So that worked out. Diesel engine, which I wasn't going to use anyway. And you can buy one of these for $1,000. I said, with the wheels and the drive axles and the everything? He said, yep. So I paid $800 for the new cab. I paid $1,000 for the frame. And we went to work. We stretched the frame 7 feet. We pulled the body off of it, got all the rust fixed, put it all, you know, beautifully painted. I mean, it has been pristine. That was April 8, 2020. What is this? March the 2nd, 2023. Almost 3 years. And we are probably 2 weeks away, just a couple of days away from starting it, and a couple of weeks away from actually being able to get behind the wheel if my steering wheel comes in. You know, that's quite essential. My seats are covered with leather. I have a sound system in there that's going to sound good. We have to insulate the cab. You know, we use this rubberized insulation that goes around that makes it really quiet on the inside of the cab. So I've got this flatbed built on it now. It is a thing of beauty. I am so excited about it. And we're going to use this as an image vehicle for Gateway Ford and Gateway Nissan. So if you buy a car from us and you want it delivered, well, we'll just put it on the back of this thing and deliver it to your house. And, oh, everybody's going to want to take pictures and everything because it's going to be really nice. I'm excited about the engine and a little bit apprehensive about the motor. I took the motor out of another vehicle that I had purchased, out of a 1968 Ford Thunderbird. Now, this guy was a radio show listener. That's how he found out about it. And I ended up buying the car from him, thought I had it sold, told him I had it sold. Guy backed out on me. So I said, what am I going to do with this? And so it was pretty rusty and everything, and I knew I wasn't going to restore it. But the guy said, what about that engine, Lenny, and that transmission? It's got a Ford C6 transmission, and it's got a 429 Thunderjet. That's a big old big block Ford motor. And as long as it, you know, had good compression and ran good, and we ended up rebuilding the bottom end of that engine, put new bearings in it. But ended up putting that together, long story short, took it to an engine shop after it was all restored and put back together with the fuel injection on it, and they put it on a dynamometer, dynamometer. And that tells you basically, well, they can run it. They can put gas on it, put exhaust pipes, put water in it, and they can actually run that thing on this dyno and tell you exactly how much horsepower you have, how much torque you've got. And the engine performed beautifully. But that was over a year and a half ago. So now it's sitting in my truck, almost done, fenders on. We haven't put the hood on because we need the access to it. They're running fuel lines and brake lines and coolant lines. The air conditioning is all that's being finalized right now. But I'm just keeping my fingers crossed. I'm a little nervous. Keeping my fingers crossed that thing starts up, runs good, and will actually be able to pull the weight that we're going to have on this thing, because I intend on loading cars on its back and hauling them around different places. So I'll keep you informed on that. That's really a more important news than my possible spinal cord problem. But we'll get that. We'll get both of them figured out. But the 49 is more important. So what year is this truck? It's interesting how that came about, and I'll share that with you here in just a minute. Okay, I am back. So I've got this 49 truck body sitting on top of a 2010 chassis. So what is it? Is it a 2010 or is it a 1949? Well, the interesting thing is that was my call. Did I want it to be a 2010? Because if I wanted it to, there's a VIN number, a chassis number, and it's stamped on the frame. The only problem with that, we couldn't find it anywhere. I don't know whether they painted over it, but we could not find it anywhere. Or it's ground off. Who knows? So it looks like my truck ended up being a 49, and that's what it is. So I went down to the registration office, and I said, I need a title. What for? A 1949 truck. Well, do you have the old title? I said, no. Well, you don't really need one in the state of Tennessee. Well, I knew that, but I was just testing her. And she said, all you need is a bill of sale. And I said, right, here it is. And I handed her a bill of sale. And in less than 2 weeks, I had a title for a 1949 Ford F4. So it's all coming together. But, you know, it does take a while. Just like my 1965 Mustang convertible project. It started in Kingsport, Tennessee on July 4th, 2020. I took my grandson to go up and meet with another radio show listener, and who has become a good friend, and he and his wife. And they sold me their 1965 Mustang convertible. And it was running and drivable and, you know, seemed like a pretty decent car, but it did have a lot more rust than we thought it did. So we ended up having to replace the entire chassis. I mean, from door to door, from rear bumper to the firewall on the vehicle, all of that had to be replaced. And thank goodness we didn't have to borrow one from a junkyard. You can actually get a manufactured, stamped, completely welded up chassis for a 1965 Mustang. You can do that for a lot of different vehicles. And a lot of people do that, and I'll get into that here in just a minute. But, you know, I had to decide again, okay, what's the vision here? And I ended up telling a friend about it, and he said, oh, I'd love to have that vehicle. Came and looked at it and ended up, you know, coming to an agreement on price. But I told him, I said, I've got to do this and that. Well, the budget got completely out of hand, and I said, listen, you don't have to buy this thing. Oh, thank you. I can't spend that much money. So now it became my project and with no real buyer in sight. But there will be one someday. I may keep this car for a while because it's going to be so pretty. It's going to be white with red interior, very bright red interior, and a black canvas top, you know, where most time they put plastic tops on convertibles. This is like canvas, fabric. And so it's a power top. It'll go down, and I've got beautiful wheels and completely rebuilt the engine. I mean, we blew this engine apart and put it back together. Increased the horsepower from 215 to probably pushing 310. We didn't put it on a dyno. I was afraid it would blow up. No, I just didn't think it was necessary. But because of the camshaft that we put in it and the kind of pistons that we put in it, we increased the horsepower. Bored it out just a little bit because you had to. The cylinder walls had some scratches on them, so we bored it out a little bit. So that started back then in July 2020, and after the interior and the top gets put on, which we have an appointment to get the top put on at a little place called Speedway Seat Covers. I'll do a shout out for them because they're in Jonesboro and they do a fabulous job. I don't know that he does much in terms of modern vehicles, but if you have a vintage vehicle like a 55 Chevy, you want to put an original interior in, or like my Mustang or convertible tops, he does that too. They do a great job at Speedway. So it goes up to Speedway on the 13th. And I'll probably get it back. He'll probably keep it, I don't know, a few days, maybe a week. And then I'll be able to drive it. And I'll be able to load it on the back of my car hauler and just drive it around. That was the plan for the Amelia Island Concours. I was going to put a car on the back of my car hauler and drive it to Amelia Island. But I decided not to. Well, I didn't decide not to. The people that were restoring it decided not to for me because they couldn't get it done in time. But that's the way it goes when, you know, it's just like building a house. Sometimes the materials get there when you need them, and sometimes they're back ordered. We've run into a few circumstances with these getting parts, but not much. We had a lot more at the Ford store getting parts, you know, during the pandemic because of all the different suppliers and the issues they were having with the workforce and getting materials from other suppliers. So, but I am really excited. And then the final project that I've got going right now is going to be this 1948 Lincoln Continental convertible. Google it. Look at those things online. I am really fired up about that. I mean, the first day I saw this car, I knew I had to have it. And we were able to work out a deal where I could buy the car. It's got original paint, which the paint doesn't look good, but it's going to be beautiful when we get done with it. And that may be a keeper. The Mustang convertible, I'm going to sell it to somebody. So if you know anybody interested in a completely restored, immaculate, beautiful 1965 Mustang convertible with a console and a new pony interior, everything's new. I mean, it's a new car. It's going to drive like a new car. If you know anybody interested in that, call me, 423-552-2020. Not going to sell my car hauler. That'll be something my family will have to sell after I'm gone. You know, you got to leave them something to do, right? I mean, you know, it's just there's certain things that they want and there's certain things they don't want. And like right now, my girls are thinking, well, what would you? I say, well, what of my vehicles would you like to have, you know, when I'm not around anymore? Don't talk like that. They don't want to really talk about it. But one girl wants the K-Code Mustang. The other girl wants the Corvair that I have, and my grandson wants the Bronco, 1970 Bronco. So that means I only have about six or seven others I've got to parcel out. Okay, so I wanted to get into a little bit about sourcing for restorations. It is a different world when it comes to finding the parts, whether you go new, used, whether you go original equipment. You know, if you want to restore a vehicle like it was when it rolled off the factory, or do you want to make modern modifications to it to make it safer, make it more, I guess, drivable, enjoyable out on the road. There's several ways that you can go. But now a lot of people, at least at the hot rod shops that I'm familiar with, they're not doing original restorations. What you end up with is, well, 1950 technology. It's just new. Now, I don't mind 1950 design or 1955, like a 57 Chevy or something like that. Don't mind, love the design, but they don't drive good. You know, they're just big old heavy boxes, and the frames aren't made like the modern frames are out of the high-strength steel. The suspension systems just are very crude, to say the least. Now, you're probably, let's say you are going to modernize a 57 Chevy. What would you do? Well, number one, you might change the rear axle. You would definitely change it if you're going to put like a lot more horsepower underneath the hood, because the rear axle differential won't handle the power of a modern engine. I mean, just think, those cars had about 150 horsepower, maybe 160. A modern Coyote V8, well, you wouldn't put that in a 55 Chevy or a 57 Chevy. You'd put an LS Corvette engine in it, and that's probably cranking out anywhere from 350 to 500 horsepower. So you've got to have a much stronger, stouter rear gear. You also got to have a modern transmission. You know, you got to decide, do I want to shift gears, or do I want it to do the shifting for me? Now, what most people are going for now are these modern transmissions that have like 6 speeds and 9 speeds and 10 speeds. A lot of folks are putting in LS engines with a 10-speed Chevy Silverado transmission in it because, I mean, it just makes it more drivable. And then the suspension, the front suspension, they're going like coilovers, basically where you have a lower control arm, an upper control arm, and in between you have a spring and a shock that are made together. It makes the car handle better. You know, they're going to rack and pinion steering to make them steer more precisely. Of course, modern wheels and tires. The whole engine is being replaced. It'll have fuel injection. It'll have an electronic control module that will control the air and the fuel mixture. And, I mean, it just makes it a pleasure to drive. It's just like driving a modern car, except you're in an old body. And plus, it's going to handle a lot better now. So, you know, if you've got an old car and you're thinking about restoring it, let's say it's a sports car like a Camaro or a Mustang, could be a Mustang. Could be a Dodge Challenger or something like that. I always recommend you go with the engine that was manufactured by that manufacturer. I would not put a Ford engine in a Chevrolet. Now, what a lot of hot rodders do, they like the 1932 Ford coupe, you know, deuce coupe, little body, is just, it's iconic, for lack of a better word. But too many of them have Chevy engines in them. They have a 350 or a 383 stroker engine put in it, and you ask them why they did it, and they say, well, it's just easier to get parts, and it's cheaper, and you can get a lot of horsepower out of a Chevy V8, and it's true. But I would never do that. That would go against one of my precepts. Yep, I've got precepts. You've got to me, you put a Ford engine in a Ford car. So if I'm got the 32 Ford, it's going to have a 347 stroker in it. And it's going to sound good. If I'm doing a Chevrolet, it's going to have a Chevrolet engine in it. So that's my philosophy. So if you have some type of a vehicle that you're thinking, or you know about one, you're thinking about doing something like this, and most of you aren't, but if you are, then feel free to give me a call. You know, one of the best things you could do would be to come to Greenville. Call me. Come to Greenville, Tennessee, and we'll take a little tour through the Ricky Parton's hot rod shop. And my shop as well, and you can see the possibilities. You know, I think it's really important to do that before you actually go out and buy a hot rod or buy a sports car or something like that. You need to make sure you know what's the end game here. Is this something you're going to keep? Are you going to show it? See, I don't like going to car. I like going to car shows, but I don't like showing a car in a car show because you have to sit there and answer all the questions and stuff like that. And that's okay sometimes, but I like to buy cars. I like to discover cars and then buy them if possible or find somebody else to buy them. I mean, I've sold, I think, over 30 vehicles on Bring a Trailer. Four, and they didn't even belong to me. They belonged to somebody else, and they just didn't know how to sell their cars, so I helped them. But I like to find cars, discover them, fix them up, and then sell them. And if it's really special, then I'll keep it. So that's my plan. That's my game plan. And I've got places to keep cars. You probably don't. You know, if you just have a two-car garage and your wife typically, or you typically park outside and she parks inside, and the other side's full of boxes, you know, you may have to say, well, honey, we got to move all these boxes so I can put this this 32 Ford hot rod that we're buying. What do you need that for? You know, and then you have to try to justify it. Or you might have one of those wives that says, you do whatever you want to do. Do they exist? I'm not sure they do. But, you know, you have to have a game plan, right? You have to be on the same page. You know, if you have a hot rod, when are you going to drive it? Or a classic car, when are you going to drive? You going to drive it on Sundays? You know, what about when the oil spews out all over the garage? What are you going to do then? Do you have a mechanic that you can take it to? Do you want to spend money on that kind of stuff? Too many people buy vintage cars and then they just sit there. And those boxes that they moved out of the way, all of a sudden those boxes are stacked on top of the car. It becomes a shelf. And the interior becomes a free storage container. Don't let that happen. Okay, I'll be back for a final word. Yeah, one of the reasons that I collect cars is because I have a shop. And I can do everything. I can paint them. I can tear them apart. I can have my mechanic. But I've got people that have the skill sets to do it. If I didn't, if I lose Johnny, for example, and he finally decides to retire, he's my main guy, I don't know what I'm going to do. You know, because a lot of these guys that, you know how to tear these old cars apart and fix stuff instead of just ordering parts, knows how to adjust a carburetor or rebuild a carburetor, they're going away. They don't want to do it anymore. And so it's hard to find any youngsters that know how to do that kind of stuff. So just be careful what you buy. If you need any advice, give me a call, 423-552-2020. Or if you know how to use email, you can email me, LennyLawson2020@gmail.com. Well, thanks for listening, and I'll talk to you tomorrow.